All right, so today we are in part 28 of the teaching, Love and Torah. All right? Now, we are making a shift here. Okay, we're now shifting towards focusing on the second of the two great commands. So the whole Love and Torah teaching, just a quick reset, has been trying to understand what love has to do with it. Okay, in other words, you know, the Christianity really likes to focus on, oh, it's not about the law, now it's about love. Well, it's always been about both. Almost every verse that talks about one mentions the other. And so we've been studying this based on the framework of the two great commands. You know, Yeshua mentions them. We're going to see them again here as we go through the Berachah Hashah, the command to love Elohim and the command to love our neighbor. And we spent most of the first 27 parts of this focusing on loving Elohim. So now we're going to go ahead and switch gears to focusing on the second of the two great commandments, the loving your neighbor as yourself. We'll begin in Luke chapter 10 and in verse 25. Okay, Luke chapter 10 and verse 25. And see, a certain one, learned in the Torah, stood up, trying him and saying. Now, I'm going to interrupt myself a lot here. I want to make sure that we are studying this like we'd be studying in a master class or studying in some sort of advanced class. I want you to constantly be looking at and understanding what is going on when information is being shared. So what we have here, he says here, a certain one learned in the Torah stood up. So first of all, we know this is a scholar. This is someone who the people around would have respected as having great wealth of knowledge of the Torah. Okay? Second point being, he stood up for a reason. Remember, context is who's speaking, who's the audience, what's the issue, what's going on. So the speaker here is one who's learned it in the Torah, and what the issue is he's trying to test him. He's trying him. Almost all of the interactions between Yeshua and the scholars of the day, the leadership of the day in the Jewish community, was about Torah. They were looking to find a way to discredit his knowledge of Torah or his application of Torah. Because after all, he was walking around being looked at as a great teacher. The best way for them to, you know, end that whole deal, those who didn't like what he was doing, was to discredit him. Show him to not know what he was talking about. And so here's one of those moments. We have to understand the context of everything that flows out of this is a context of the Jews at the time who was the primary audience of Yeshua, right? Yeshua wasn't running around talking to all the Gentiles everywhere all over the place. He was talking to a Jewish community. These were his students. These are the people that followed him. These are the ones who were going around telling everybody, hey, you got to come hear this teacher. He's great. And so this one who already has respected the people. Because remember, Yeshua shows up on the scene after really nobody knew him very much up to this point. There are others who, through their lives, are being, you know, have reputations of being learned scholars and all these kind of things. And so one of them stands up and says, excuse me. Okay, a certain one says, and he says, teacher. Okay, so he's recognizing that this person is looked at as a teacher. I'm not so sure he's looking at him as his teacher. He's saying, teacher, when you claim you're a teacher, hey, teacher. Because people do that with me. They say, hey, rabbi. Okay, you're a rabbi? We'll answer this. Are you a rabbi? How would you handle that? He says, teacher, what shall I do to inherit everlasting life? He's thinking, oh, I'll get him with this one. What do I have to do to inherit everlasting life? Let's understand the question. His question is, what do I have to do? Right? What is there that I would do? Where do I put my effort in? What things do I have to do to inherit everlasting life? So we're talking about what we would look at today as the kingdom or the forever, the Olam Haba, which is what the Jews would have called the age to come. What do I do to inherit that? To live forever, that inheriting of an everlasting life. So they were still looking for or forward to everlasting life. So what do I need to do? So Yeshua, being a very good Jew, answers a question with a question. And he said to him, well, what has been written in the Torah? How do you read it? He turned it right back on the other guy. He says, okay, You're asking me? I want to know where you're coming from. You know, Yeshua, and I do this with people all the time. They'll ask a question. I go, okay, well, what do you mean by that? So I want to know where you're coming from. What's the issue really here? Is it Torah observance that's the issue? Is it relational stuff? What's the issue that you're really trying to get to? So Yeshua says, well, you're a scholar learned in the Torah. He says, what's it say in the Torah? How do you read it? Now, don't miss the context here. He told that person, indirectly at this point, more directly in a minute, the answer was in the Torah. The answer is not in the Brit. The Brit didn't exist yet. There was no New Testament. The answer wasn't something they didn't know and couldn't receive yet because nobody'd said it yet. The answer was in the Torah. Let's be clear. He says, what has been written in the Torah about everlasting life? How do you understand it? And he answering said, well, you shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind. So he answered and quoted from Deuteronomy 6, the Ve'ahavta. And he said, and your neighbor as yourself, which is from Leviticus. Okay, so he's got those two things, loving vertically and loving horizontally, the two great commands. And he said to him, Yeshua says now to the gentleman, he says, you have answered correctly. Good job. Right answer. So you have to love Elohim and love your neighbors yourself. And so he says, do this and you shall live. Now, Yeshua understood that wasn't the problem. The problem is, and the problem is for all of us, is do what? How do you love your Elohim and how do you love your neighbor? That's really the problem. And this is the problem that we get out of mainstream Christianity all the time. They tell us, oh, you just have to love one another. Okay, but how? You got to just love Messiah. Okay, but how? You got to just love God. Okay, but how? This is really where the challenge is. Yeshua knew that. So he said, fine, you were very general. I'll give you a general answer. Great, do that and you'll live. Listen to his answer now. He says, do this, what this? Loving Elohim and loving neighbor, and you shall live. You shall have the everlasting life that you're looking for. So doing those things that were quoted now, and of course, if you're a New Testament only person, you didn't know he was quoting Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus, what was it, 18 or 19? Let me give you that verse correctly here. 19:18. So in 19:18, it says, do not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your children of your people, and you shall love your neighbors yourself. I am Yahweh. All right, so this isn't a new idea. See, one of the things I know was probably a revelation to all of you was when you came to realize that there were so many things that you were told in the New Testament were not new. Oh, like when you found out that circumcision of heart was always required. That's not a new idea. I've had so many Christians tell me, oh, well, circumcision of flesh was then and now it's of the heart. Well, actually, if you read the Old Testament, it was always both. Loving your neighbor as yourself. That was in Leviticus 19:18. Okay? All right. So let's follow this through. What shall I do? Okay, so when he said, what shall I do to inherit an everlasting life? He's also saying, what do I actually have to do? Not what God's going to do for me, what the Messiah is going to do for me. What do I have to do? And Yeshua said, you do these things and you shall live. Okay? You do these things. So by the way, when you need to look for answers for eternal questions and eternal issues, then where do you go? You go to the Tanakh, you go to the Old Testament. He said, do this and you shall live. But he, now we're going to get to verse 29. So he, this is now that scholar, because that really wasn't his question. He didn't have an issue that vague and that general. He's trying to really figure out, he needs to nail Yeshua on a specific detail of wrong point something. He needs something that was an error in a detail and the mechanics or something. So giving this very general answer that he gave Yeshua, and Yeshua saying very generally, well, do that and you'll be fine, didn't leave him much to work with. So now he's got to probe a little deeper and be more specific. So he says, and he wishing to declare himself righteous, said to Yeshua. So what's the context now? This person, in his little debate with Yeshua, is trying to declare himself that he's right. Okay? He's righteous. He's right. And he says to Yeshua, "And who is my neighbor?" Now he's trying to look to see what this teacher is going to say. Well, all right, I'm supposed to love my neighbor. It's not about, well, who is Elohim? They all agreed on who Elohim was. So who's my neighbor? Come on, Wyatt. Come on, teacher. Tell me who my neighbor is. You see? This is where he wants to think he's going to trip him up. And replying, verse 30, Yeshua said, "A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho." So now he's going to tell him a story. He's not going to answer the question directly. He says, "A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers who, both stripping and beating him, went away, leaving him half dead. And by a coincidence, a certain priest was going down that way." Now, by priest, we're talking about as in the Jews, as into a Levite. Okay? This is a Levite, not a pagan priest or something like this. A Levite goes by. May even have been a Kohen. Okay? But he says a priest. So a Levite goes by. And when, listen, so a Kohen first, and the next verse says a Levite. So first a priest, a Kohen goes by. So we're working our way down. We're starting at the highest level, the Kohen, the priest. Okay, the Kohen goes by, and he saw him, he passed by on the other side. He says, well, I don't want to walk by that person, he's been beaten up. Then likewise, just a Levite. Now we're going down from priest, of the high priest, down to the Levite. Levite also, when he came to the place, seeing, passed by on the other side. So we've gone from the highest level to the next level. Then he goes, but a certain Shomronite, a Samaritan, journeying, came upon him, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. Now bear in mind that the people at that time, if you don't understand context-wise how they thought about Samaritans, you wouldn't see the contrast being played out here. They did not look at Samaritans in very high esteem. Okay? There was a lot of Jews that were in Samaria, the Shomronites, the Samaritans, who, when we had the problems come in with the Hellenization issues and the whole thing with the Maccabees, that stayed in that area. When we had the Babylonian captivities and you had also the Assyrian stuff going, there were those that would stay and assimilate. So the Samaritans, this is why when Yeshua ran into that Samaritan woman and said, our father Jacob's well. Are you greater than our father Jacob? So they had the same descendancy, but these are ones who were looked at as goyim, as Gentiles, because of their choice to assimilate. Okay? So this is a Samaritan, looked upon as very low in the pecking order, so to speak. High priest, Levite, then all of a sudden dropped way down to Samaritan. He could have done more layers, but he went right down to Samaritan. Okay? Now, the Samaritan, though, had compassion on him. And he went to him and bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine, and having placed him on his own beast, he brought him to the inn and looked after him, brought him to an inn and looked after him. And going out the next day, he took out 2 pieces of silver, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, "Look after him, and whatever more you spend, I shall repay you when I return." Took care of him, couldn't stay, was going to leave, made sure he was taken care of. Who then of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the robbers? And he said, "He who showed compassion on him." Then Yeshua said to him, "Go and do likewise." Go and do likewise. Now, follow how this is playing through. He didn't actually answer the question directly, did he? He said, being neighbor is having a certain mindset. How you look at other people. He's saying, the priest saw the guy over there, beaten up, bloodied probably, looked like he was probably robbed. I mean, you know, there's a certain look you could tell that somebody probably robbed him, and decided to walk the other side. The Levite saw the same thing. Probably a lot of people in the story would have just walked aside. But this one here, and it's not because he was a Samaritan. He used the Samaritan because he wanted to really jab at this guy. who in his self-righteousness would have thought, oh, the Jewish priest would have been, or the Levitical priest would have been the guy doing the right things. So Yeshua decided to poke at those guys and say, nope, the Kohen didn't do the right thing. The Levite didn't do the right thing. The guys you think are down here and low on the scale here, he did the right thing. He didn't do the right thing, though, because he was a Samaritan. And the other guys, by the way, didn't do the wrong thing because they were priests or Levites. It had to do with the person's individual thought process of their feelings and their thoughts towards what they were seeing. So how you see people is going to determine how you treat them. Are you looking down on them? Or are you seeing them as they are? This is a man, whoever he is, who's been left here half dead, beaten up, and is in need of help. Now, you notice, it's not like he said he took the guy in and brought him to his house and adopted him or something. He wanted just to make sure that his needs were going to be met, that he bandaged up his wounds, took him to a place where he'd be safe and have shelter. He wasn't going to stay with him forever. Okay, and they weren't going to necessarily become best friends, but he was going to make sure this man was no longer in danger. And that was being neighbor. Okay, so it's a mindset of, some of you think, well, either we're enemies or best, closest family member, friends, or there's not enough gradient of the right ways to do things. We should be treating everybody with at least certain basic levels of love and compassion. Even more so for those in the household of Elohim, but not ignoring the fact that anybody and everybody out there deserves and should be treated like a future member of the household of Elohim. And so he says, look, in this story, now he really put the guy in a hard place. He said, okay, well, which one of them did the right thing is what he said, basically. Remember, the guy was trying to declare himself righteous. He said, well, which one of these guys did the right thing? He said, well, the Samaritan did. He says, well, now notice he couldn't even say the Samaritan. He said, he who had compassion. He didn't want to admit it was the Samaritan. But that's the whole point. He who has compassion. So it's about when and where compassion needs to come from you towards somebody and what compassion should look like. All right? Now, bear in mind, there are times where there is also correction happening. There's times where other things are happening. And so there is also compassion in correction. But in this case, he's saying, look, this is someone who had a need. Other people walked by and saw the need. This is the same thing that we read in James. And James says, if you see your brother naked and don't clothe him, or hungry and don't feed him. Yeshua said the same thing too, right? He says, you're aware of something and you don't do anything, then where is it? Now, remember, this is, let's be really clear, this is someone who could not do for himself. We're not talking about enabling, codependency, entitling, okay? This is a man lying half dead, beat up with wounds that needed to be bound. You may have somebody that you know who's emotionally in that same place, and you might need to be able to help them find their way to some sort of level of stability up to a point. All he did was bind the guy's wounds and make sure he was safe. He didn't become the guy's best friend and take him into his house and everything else. You understand what I'm saying? He had compassion and expressed love through this act of service of taking care of his basic needs. All right? This is a tricky one. This whole thing is a very tricky one. And Yeshua is trying to help us understand. So he's giving us a parable. Parables are kind of tricky at times. Why? Because they're indirect instruction. So we have to glean and peel away layers and dig into them a little bit to see what's really going on. So let's be clear. This is talking about, in the number one framework piece here, is compassion expressed towards someone who could not do for themselves. All right? Compassion for someone in a very high level of need. Okay, because he wasn't just robbed. He was robbed, beat up, and left half dead. That's pretty beat up, okay? We already read, I have it in my notes to go to Leviticus 19:18. We did that. I read that already. That's where it talks about loving your neighbor as yourself. Let's go now to Matthew chapter 5. Some of you are thinking, Rabbi, you actually completed a section you were working on in one teaching and still have more to go in 20 minutes. Wow. All right. Matthew chapter 5. We're going to begin in verse 43. All right, so we're starting off this trying to understand loving neighbor. Number one, what did we learn? It has to do with compassion, okay? Loving the neighbor. Actually, what was necessary before compassion? Awareness. Seeing and being aware that there was a need. Not just seeing. I mean, you could see the person laying there and decide, well, they're lying there. It's not my problem, you know? But having an awareness that there was an opportunity. Okay? That you can show compassion. All right? Now, we're in Matthew chapter 5, we'll begin in verse 43. You heard it that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemies. Okay, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Okay? Now, that was actually not said, okay, or written there, but he says, you love your neighbor and hate your enemy. He says, but I say, now we're going to get instruction from Yeshua. Now, when we get this instruction, is he changing a law? No. He's doing what he always does. He's giving you a more full understanding of the spirit of the point. Okay? All right. So he says, but I say, do you love your enemies? Now, because we're told to love our neighbor. And we've taught in other places that he was talking about certain peoples were an enemy to Israel, etc. He's saying, I want you to love your enemies. Well, what does that mean to love your enemies? I'm going to take my enemies in my house and feed them dinner and whatever. Love my enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those hating you. Pray for those insulting you and persecuting you so that you become sons of your Father in the heavens, because he makes the sun rise on the wicked and on the good and sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. Okay, so we're dealing with a whole different problem here in chapter 5 than we're dealing with in, you know, dealing with the enemy that you might think of, like literally your enemy trying to kill you. This is talking about more of an emotional state, okay? This is where, you know, he talks about in verse 37, it says, let your yea be yea, your no be no. Then in verse 38, he says, you heard that it was said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And then he says, look, if someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn over the other one also. If he wishes to sue you to take away your inner garment, let him have your outer garment as well. Okay, if someone compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. He's trying to get you, the people he's teaching, to think in much more generous terms, much more patient terms, much more compassionate terms. Not like literally an enemy like, say, we dealt with the Amalekites, okay? That's not what we're talking about here. He's not talking about people literally trying to kill you. He's talking about people that are mean, ill towards you, treat you poorly. Slapping your face is more of a metaphor for, you know, because a lot of times people say something to you, say it felt like a slap in the face. Because obviously if someone goes to slap you in the face, you may want to take 2 steps back so they don't slap you on the other side. Now, that's just some wisdom there. But it's all trying to make a point about how we see other people, all right? Do not see. This, by the way, goes back to, let's actually scroll back earlier in, actually, you know what, I turned the page, and it's actually later in chapter 7. Look, in chapter 7, it talks about do not judge, lest you be judged. And then it talks about the splinter in your brother's eye when you don't notice the plank in your own eye. Look, this is all about don't look at them thinking that they're any different than you. You need to be more like your Father in heaven. So chapter 7, in the beginning of that chapter, is actually dealing with the same sort of idea. But he says to you in verse 44, back in chapter 5, he's saying, look, I say to you, love your enemies, bless those cursing you, do good to those hating you. So he's talking about that type of enemy who are spitting on you, cursing you, wishing you ill, you know, spreading rumors about you, blah, 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 blah. He goes, do good to them when you have opportunity to do good. Bless them. Pray for them, those that are insulting you and persecuting you. This is the level of enemy we're talking about. Instead, what do? You wish them ill. You talk to all your friends to try to get your friends to wish them ill. You talk about how awful and horrible and what losers they are and how mean they are and all this other stuff. Instead of saying, you know, I had a challenge today with so-and-so and I'd like you to pray for them. I'd like Abba to bless them. They seem to be struggling with something. Okay? Look, when they treat you badly, it's not because of you. It's because they're struggling with something. Okay? We have to get to the place, and this is something Yeshua is trying to do. Remember we talked about a lot of inner engineering, that inner stuff, to try to get the inside connected more in the way of the above. Remember what he says here at the end of this verse that we were reading? He says, so that you become like the above. Verse 45, right? So that you become sons of your Father in the heavens. Who the Father understands the sun rises on both the wicked and the righteous. He understands that the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. We're all living on this planet. The Father has to still do the calling, revealing, etc. With those in the above, there's a different level of awareness that there's choices in our response. If you're going to love your neighbor, you're going to have to create space. It's already there, but it happens so quickly you don't even know it's there. The space between the thing that happens and your response. Okay? When you react, there's no time in that space. You've lost that space. Somebody does something or something happens around you and you immediately respond. That's called a reaction, not a response. There was no conscious thought. You just reacted. Those are almost always going to be bad decisions. If it's a negative thing. If it's a good thing and you have a quick response or a quick reaction in a positive way, that's fine. What I'm saying is when something negative happens in your direction and you react instead of responding, you're probably always going to either react poorly or you're going to make it worse. You're going to throw gas on that fire. You'll end up essentially making it worse. Okay? So somehow you have to get to the place where you recognize. What he's saying is you got to recognize the person who's persecuting you, insulting you, who's hating you, etc., has nothing to do with you. So love them. They're broken. They're damaged. They're in pain. It's exploding out of them, okay? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth, it speaks. So when you're getting vile, hateful, judging, critical, nasty, guess where it's coming out of? A heart filled with all of that stuff. Wow, you might want to love on those people, pray for those people, have compassion on those people. Okay? You may want to have that because they are in a bad place, not you. Oh, I'm in this terrible place. All these people are persecuting it. No, they're in a bad place. You're just the target of all their bad yuck. Abba's got you covered. Look, King David felt this way a lot. I mean, King David, you know, says it in Psalm 119, every so many verses. Well, they're out there trying to persecute me. They're all attacking me. They're all surrounding me. They're doing all of these things. Very common, not unusual. And so we have to adjust our internal. He says you need to become sons of your Father in the heavens. Does your Father get his feelings hurt, your Father in the heavens, when we do things? No. He doesn't have his feelings laid out anywhere for anybody to step on. None of that is happening. There's no issue going on there as far as that's concerned. Does he respond strong, in a strong manner sometimes? Yes. Just like a good father or a good parent would to a child to say, hey, you need to know that is not proper, acceptable behavior. So you get a little bit of a strong hand sometimes. Right? It says that the father, you know, will correct those he loves. Calls it chastisement. Now, bear in mind that correction and chastisement coming from someone who loves you, I don't mean who says he loves you or she loves you, but who actually loves you. Because a lot of people say, oh, well, my husband or my wife or my kid, whoever, they're doing all these things. Well, they say they love me, but they don't treat me like they love me. Well, if it's coming from a proper place of right authority, right relationship, then chastisement and correction can come and be received properly, hopefully. But it will come and be directed correctly, even if it comes across pretty strong. Yahweh's pretty strong sometimes here. I mean, he really put some strong things in their face when he was disappointed in their response to certain things. Because some of us have gotten to the point where we're not correctable at all. You know, there was a time where I've had people back in the, you know, when I used to, you know, when we first got started, I had so many things to do. I didn't have a lot of staff, didn't have a lot of people working here, and I had to do almost everything myself. And I would mention from time to time how overwhelmed I was getting so many things done, wearing so many hats. And from time to time, people would come up to me and volunteer. Or they'll say, how come, you know, we volunteered, but you never let us do anything? And my answer, I couldn't give them. The answer that I wanted to give them was because you're not correctable. By correctable, I mean not that they can't be corrected, but they're not correctable. Meaning if I go to correct you, because by the way, you should know this. If you ever work with anybody, okay, and that whichever one of you is actually in the authority place, will at some point be disappointed or frustrated with the person who's working with them or for them, because you will do something not the way they wanted. And then correction will come. But the question is, how do you respond to the correction? So when I wanted to tell this person, I said, but you're so fragile that when you do make a mistake and I tell you it's not what I wanted or it wasn't the way I wanted it or do it a different way or whatever it was, guess what? You're going to collapse into a puddle of tears and have an emotional meltdown. And that's happened several times. So if anybody thinks I'm talking about them, I probably am. But I mean, this has happened a lot in 20 years, okay? That we've had people where I was like, well, that's not the way I wanted that, or I wanted this, or this other thing, or whatever it was. The question is, are you correctable? In other words, can you respond appropriately to correction? So when we're talking about here, those that are doing these things, insulting and this and that and persecuting, bear in mind that we're first assuming that they actually are really doing these things. Although Yeshua is also telling you, you need to love them because it may not be them and maybe you thinking they're doing it. Let's add that into the mix. You may perceive it as them persecuting you and picking on you and insulting you when really it may not be. It could be your perception of it. But these are not literal enemies he's talking about here. Those that you're perceiving as enemy. Those that may be acting in some manner like an enemy. So it's both. I mean, it's not just you perceiving it. They may actually really be doing certain things. But like your Father in heaven, he knows that you're a work in progress. You've got to know that that person is a work in progress. And they're expressing themselves towards you in their actions and their words and their tone out of an issue in here, inside. Okay? They're hurt. They're upset. They're triggered, whatever happened in their life that you just triggered that was similar, or what I mean, they may be having a PTSD moment from a life experience. You don't know, okay? And so he says, love your enemies. Do good to those hating you. Bless those cursing you. Pray for those insulting you and persecuting you. And you're thinking, that's crazy. How do you do that? Well, first, you can't do that unless you think like your Father in heaven. It's the above that can do that. The below can't do that. So you have to get to the point where you're thinking like, feeling like, if you were from the above. This is why it's the, what's the first fruit of the Ruach? Love. So love is the first aspect of the fruit. And some of you are thinking, I know how to love. I've got love in my heart. I love people. Okay, good. How do you love your enemy, though? What do you do in terms of how you deal with your enemy? Now we're in a whole different place. Are you blessing them? Are you praying for them? Yes, I'm praying for them to get out of my life. I'm praying for them to have, you know, hot coals pour on their head. That's not the prayers he's talking about here. Abba says, look, pray for them. They're suffering. They're miserable. They're taking it out on you. So pray for them. Look, we talk about this often enough. It's in the Developing the Character of Yeshua teaching. You know, the problem is self. And a selfless person cannot be hurt by all of this stuff. A selfless person can have their cheek slapped and turn around and say, here, make you feel better, slap this one too. A selfless person can say, oh, you want my inner garment? Here's my outer garment. A selfless person is not going to take it personally because there's no person to take it personally. That part is not the issue. You're selfless. You're not focused on self. I mean, if anybody in the universe should be offended and insulted by behavior, it's our Father in the heavens. Because we offend and insult him and embarrass him daily. And yet he doesn't respond that way. And so it's spiritual to behave this way. It's not fleshly and earthly and below. Okay? And so how are we going to do this? And that's the whole point of what we're going to start digging into more and more, is that this is about a mindset. It's about having, I talk about a hyper-vigilant awareness. You must be aware constantly of what's happening and whether or not you're reacting or responding. Now, of course, a reaction is a response, but I'm going to make the difference being a response without thought is a reaction. So when I say response, I mean there was thought and choice, okay? When I say reaction, yes, it's a response, but it's a response without thought. You're just, it's an immediate reaction. You didn't think, you just reacted. And so when you're dealing with challenging issues and challenging moments, the big fights, the big arguments, the big pain you suffer, all of the meltdowns you go through, all those triggered things, if you're blue, you know what I mean when you're having a blue out, okay? All that's happening is because you didn't have enough space to think about the choices you had and how you respond. Yeshua said during his trial, I could respond and call down a legion of angels. It's an option. Or I could stand here and let you spit on me. I make a choice. Okay? This is important now. You know how you'll know you're Yeshua-like? Okay? One of the ways you'll know that you're getting Yeshua-like is when you never again say the words, so-and-so made me feel this way, or made me do this, or made me do that. Well, you made me angry. No, I didn't. Well, you made me upset. No, I didn't. You broke my heart. No, I didn't. You did. No, you chose to respond to whatever dumb thing I did. Now, it's not that I didn't do anything, but I can't make you. If you can get to the point where you have that space, you can realize that nobody can make you respond any particular way. You can choose. You can choose. If I put a gun to your head, you can choose to let me pull the trigger or not. You don't have to do what I say. If somebody treats you in a way that you would rather not be treated, you can still have a calm, internal peace, and then respond, knowing that it's not personal. It just feels personal. But nothing is personal. Everything feels personal, though. You want to keep Shabbat? Great. You want to keep feast? Great. You want to eat different? Great. These are easy things to do. Okay? It is easy not to steal. It is easy not to commit adultery. It's easy not to bear false witness. It's easy not to, dishonor your mother and father. That gets a little tough, though, because that one has to do with this a little bit. Because they'll treat you in a way that they say, oh, my mother's made me, my father made me, or whatever. Your parents say you make them do stuff. So that one actually fits more into this problem. But the mechanical things, equal weights, equal measures, how you weigh things on a scale, these are easy things. You know why? They're completely unemotional. Loving your neighbor as yourself? See, the first one is easy. Okay, loving Elohim with all your heart, mind, and being, because what does Elohim ever do to step on your toes? What does Elohim ever do to, affect you in some negative way and, spit on you and insult you or whatever it is that you think the other people are doing? Sure, you blame him every now and then when you don't have everything the way you want, but what does he actually do? Nothing. So it's easy to love him. Okay? And when you don't, it's because you're disappointed and frustrated you didn't get what you wanted your way. Oh, but people make me so mad. People upset me. People step on my toes. People offend me. People hurt my feelings. People, that's how you all feel. Okay? And you get on the phone or you talk to your friend. Oh man, so-and-so just hurt my feelings so bad. Or my husband hurt my feelings. Or my wife hurt my feelings. Or this one did this to me and that one did that to me. I have to come to recognize that there's not a piece of technology that purposely is upsetting me. When I can't log into technology. It happened yesterday a few times. Especially when I'm trying to create a new account. But I have to recognize I can choose to respond and think it's funny and laugh. I can choose to take a deep breath and just start again. All right, so it takes a little longer. Inconvenience should not get me upset. See, the problem is that this is my red challenge. Anything that slows down progress and gets in my way from moving forward gets me upset. But that's not true. I allow it to get me upset. It doesn't get me upset. You see? And if we're going to love our neighbors ourselves, then we have to first understand ourselves. Look, the reason we did the color code as an experiment in understanding personality types, the subtitle of that first little teaching we did at that Sukkot that year, or Passover that year when I first did it, was understanding yourself so you can understand others better. Okay? For the effort in loving your neighbor as yourself. And so whatever personality style test you might do, Myers-Briggs or this color thing or your typical, you know, one with animals, one with, you know, movie star, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, characters from a movie, all these different things that are trying to teach you a little bit about your personality. The whole point is to understand why you struggle and why you have ease with certain things. Certain things are easy and now you understand maybe why. Certain things are a struggle and now you know why. But then realize the other person also has ease and struggle. And when yours and theirs mix nicely, hey, it's wonderful. When it doesn't, it clashes, not so wonderful. Okay? And all of us have the problem that we still have way too much self. So when it says love your neighbor as yourself, okay, well, how would you treat yourself? Actually, part of the problem is you can't love your neighbor as yourself because you treat yourself badly. Your internal talk, your self-talk, worse than anybody, probably, even you would ever allow to talk to you the way you do. Well, I'm just such a loser. I can't do nothing right. Nobody wants me. Why would the Father call me? I can't do anything right. I'm blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, you treat your neighbor badly because you don't even treat yourself well. This is not easy. Look, he's going to say here, let's continue in verse 46, says, for if you just love those loving you, okay, he's making exactly the point that I'm trying to make here, what reward do you have? What is the reward there? What's the reward if you only love those loving you? There's no reward there. You know, in Luke, this is one of the only places where Yeshua uses the word that's translated as grace. He said, if you only love those loving you, what grace is there? Which is part of the teaching on the search for the doctrine of grace, where clearly it's a merited thing. Okay? So where's the merit in just loving those who love you? There's merit in loving those who hate you. Everybody loves those who love them. He says, what reward do you have? I like this wording even better. So what's the reward? How many times does a kid or somebody else come up to you and say, oh, well, look, I did all this stuff. And like, oh, see, what do you want, a medal? You know, you did what I expected you to do, what you should be doing. So you want a big prize for that? Even Yeshua in the parables and in the gospel says things like, you useless servant, you just did doing exactly what's expected of you. You want a big prize for that? I already expect you to do that. I'm going to be disappointed if you don't. So I'm not going to give you a big prize when you do what I expect you to do, what you contracted to do, what you covenanted to do. Go above and beyond and I'll be impressed. But doing what's expected. Oh, Daddy, look, I cleaned my room. Now, I may act impressed because you never do it. But if you actually, I shouldn't, because I should look at you like, good, you're finally doing what you're expected to do. What do you want, a prize? But I don't want to discourage the person because, again, that person's also dealing with emotional challenges. Right? So he says, look, for if you love those loving you, what reward have you? And are not the tax collectors not doing the same thing? And he said tax collectors, he's saying these are people that, again, towards the bottom of the ranking list here is like the lower ranks. You know, look at them as dirt. Oh, you think you're so great, but even tax collectors love them. Okay? Then he goes, and if you greet your brothers only, what do you do more than others? Are the tax collectors not doing so too? He says, look, therefore be in the fullness of maturity. Okay, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. In other words, be in that fullness of maturity. It's another definition for the Greek word. Okay? Here that word can be turned complete in all its parts, full grown in maturity. We're talking about the character here. The Greek that's here, it's teleios. And so I wrote in my notes here, it can be translated as complete in all its parts, often associated scripturally with character specifically. Full grown, which is also a character relationship thing. He says, be complete and full grown in your maturity, your integrity, like your Father in the heavens. Your Father in the heavens loves everybody, and we don't deserve it from a mechanical point of view. Okay? He says, so if you only love those loving you, what's that get you? What, do you want a smiley face sticker for that? You want a prize? It's not going to get you anywhere. He says, you got to do more than that, which is why it's a fruit of the Ruach. What's the Ruach? Let's go back and look at the fruit of the Ruach for a second. So the fruit of the Ruach is the fruit of the fullness of the intrinsic nature of Elohim. Not just if you have this thing indwelling you, it just starts budding all this fruit, producing all this fruit. No. When you embrace the intrinsic nature, go back to the teaching on understanding the Ruach, okay? The intrinsic nature of Elohim. Elohim is love. But not just love, like in whatever definition, in that fullness of the definition. And we talked about that quite a bit in the earlier parts of this teaching. And so if we are going to be filled with that intrinsic nature, the fruit of that nature is being able to love an enemy. That's the fruit of having his nature. Don't think of it as some magical, mystical, ethereal thing that some of the spirit thing comes in you and now all of a sudden you can love an enemy. I would venture to guess that all of you for quite a while have had that Ruach in you. He has given you his Ruach for quite a while. And guess what? You still struggle loving an enemy. You still struggle with joy in your trials. You still struggle with a lot of the nine aspects of the fruit. Why? Because it has nothing to do with this magical, mystical energy force that comes into you. You've got to embrace his intrinsic nature. You become like him, the fullness of the intention of what he's doing. His fullness of the intention is that you would love those loving you and those hating you. That you would have love for. Now, how you express that love, the one in the loving neighbor, Good Samaritan story, didn't express it by being in love with. Expressed it by being loving in compassion, providing caring needs, meeting those needs in a caring way, all right? Compassionate way. But we don't think of that. We think of love as an emotional thing, all right? Here's a really good question for you, because I think we all have a very, very likely chance. Well, I don't know how I want to put this. All of us probably are disconnected in how we understand love. So I'm going to ask you to ask yourself this question. If you're married, do you love your spouse? Okay, good. Why? No, I'm serious. If you actually had to answer that question, you have children? Uh-huh. Do you love your children? Yep. Why? Why do you love them? Love is like a hard word for us to really grasp. I love my wife. Why? She loves me. Why? I've got children. I love my children. Why? Because what? Well, because they're my children. That's, you know, that's true. Why do you love your husband? Because he's my husband. Why do you love your wife? Because she's my wife. Oh, okay, if that, first of all, I think that's a great answer, because it shouldn't necessarily have to be more than that. Then how do you express that? See, we have this challenge with love. It's way more than it should be tied to an emotional state. Love is way too connected emotionally in us. Oh, I'm so in love with her. Oh, I'm so in love with him. Okay, why? What do you love about him? What do you love about her? I don't know. She's just so wonderful. Let's talk about that 10 years into the marriage. See if you still feel the same way. 10 years later, I'm going to kill him. If he does that one more time, blah, blah, blah. Because we've connected it emotionally. Okay? Love is expressed in actions. Love is something that everybody on some level should be getting, because that's an Elohim level thing. If you can love those loving you and love your enemy, it doesn't really leave a whole lot of anybody out there that you're not to love. Okay? So then it's not an emotional thing. It's not a response. How's that? Love is not a response or a reaction. Now, I may love all of you, but I may now want to spend my life with only one of you. Okay, my wife. I want to spend my life with her. But I love all of you. So I love her and I love all of you. But now I want to express that love differently. The Samaritan was expressing his love by binding the wounds and sending the man to a place where he would be safe. I express my love to my children differently than I express it to my wife. I express my love to friends differently than I express it to family members. But it's all love. So you have to figure out how to express love to an enemy even. See, we spent 27 parts on actually the easy part. Loving him. Now we're going to try to figure out how to love those that are, for us, because we're flesh, hard to love. And some of you have said that to your children or to your spouse. Man, you're just hard to love. No, they're not. They're hard for you to love. Let's be clear. Wow, man, you're sitting there talking to your spouse. Man, that boy or that girl, my daughter, your son, whatever it is, they're just so hard to love. Or a friend or somebody in the congregation, they're so hard to love. No, they're not. They're hard for you to love. This is an important distinction. Yeah, but every time I try to be nice to them, they kick me, spit on my... Yeah, that makes it challenging in terms of what to do and how to express your love. But that doesn't mean they're hard to love. It just means you haven't figured out how to do it. You're the one struggling, not them. Well, I just wish they would change so I wouldn't have to do it. That's the problem. Most of our loving neighbor as ourselves, all of our spousal problems, all our marriage problems, is because everything would just be fine if the other person changed. You're all laughing. Because you're all thinking, well, of course it would, wouldn't it now? Because after all, they're the ones making you feel bad, feel angry, feel frustrated, feel depressed, feel, you know, unappreciated, feel whatever, insecure. All right? They're making you feel. Their behavior is making you feel. They're making, you know, whatever it is. You have a choice. Everything in life is a choice. Problem is, we just don't create enough space in between the thing and the response to recognize the choice is available to you. All right? That's all he's telling you here. You already love your friends. You love your family. You love those loving you. So why can't you love an enemy? Because they're doing enemy stuff to me. It doesn't make any sense. There's no logic or reason in that. Why would I love an enemy? I want them to go away. I want them to suffer. I want them to die. I want them to, all this negative stuff. They're my enemy. The ones you need to worry about are his enemies. Okay? When he has an enemy, he tells them, you go in there and wipe them out. Or you deal with this way when it's his enemy. Don't worry about them being your enemy. You know, there was a scene in the movie Roadhouse. Some of you know the movie. Not highly recommending it. It was a movie I saw a long, long time ago. But, you know, in Roadhouse, you know, Patrick Swayze's a bouncer, and he's training a bunch of new bouncers. And he says to the bouncers, okay, if this is happening, you go over and you go to the person, you try to calm it down. So what if it doesn't calm down? Well, then you go in quietly and gently try to escort them out of the building. Well, what if that doesn't work? Well, you keep being nice and do this, and you keep being nice and keep being nice. And they said, well, when is the time not to be nice? He said, I'll tell you that. I think that's really brilliant. That's really kind of how Abba works. He decides when somebody's an enemy. Otherwise, we just have to be nice. Even though the person may be spitting on you, kicking you, throwing things at you, yelling at you, and whatever they're doing, which was happening in this bar where he was training bouncers, because this was about a place called the Roadhouse, which is a nightclub, a bar. And he was trying to explain to these guys, your job is to just be nice and try to keep the situation calm from de-escalating it, keep it from escalating and causing a real problem for everybody, get them out the door, but keep being nice. What if they punch me? Well, stop them from punching, be nice. Just block it or whatever, be nice. What if they try to do this? Be nice. What if they spit on me? What if they curse at me? What if they use foul language? Be nice. We struggle with that. It's a great life lesson. Whatever's happening around you, be nice. But. Trust me, I struggle with this like all of you. We can't but. Okay, now we're being like goats, not sheep. Okay? Be nice. Be nice. Now I sound like Mr. Ed. Wilbur. Some of you are old enough to know. All right? It's a talking horse from the 60s. Anyway, children are like, they had talking horses in the 60s? See, there's a lot you don't know. You guys have internet, we had talking horses, okay? You don't even know the joy of waiting for your neighborhood to finally get cable so you could have 23 channels of nothing. Of course, now you know the joy of 400 channels of nothing, but, you know. But we had talking horses. All right. Anyway. So, I think we have to learn this. We have to understand how to be nice when other people are not being nice, and be nice when other people are really, it's all about that self though. Well, you don't understand the way she talked to me or the way he talked to me. And our response, if I'm teaching, should be, so? What does that have to do with anything? Well, he was yelling at me. So? Well, she was cursing at me. So? That person's in pain. That person thinks you're the cause of the pain. They think you're the cause of the pain. So why not treat them with trying to alleviate their problems instead of fighting and arguing and defending yourself, but recognize that they're in pain. And you don't have to apologize from the point of view of thinking that you legitimately did whatever they're mad at, because maybe they're mad at you and you think you didn't do any of it. You're like innocent in the thing. But you can at least go over and say, I'm sorry that this hurt you so much. I'm sorry you're in so much pain. I want to help fix that. At that point, it doesn't matter who was right or wrong. I'm guilty of this all the time. At that point, it doesn't matter who was right or wrong. What matters is one, and soon to be two, are in a lot of pain. You can keep it just one by choosing to react differently. But as soon as you react a certain way, now you're both in pain. And that pain could lead to separation, all kinds of ugliness, okay? But if you realize that out of the abundance of anger, pain, PTSD, all the life experiences with you and other people, that's all just vomiting in your direction, this is a person who needs their wounds bound, needs to be made to feel safe, and taken care of. Is that fair? Does that make sense to everyone? And all the husbands and wives are thinking, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. How hard? It's going to be really hard to do. And it is. Because as soon as that pain is directed at you, you're now, with your feelings exposed, upset, offended, disrespected, insecure, whatever, you're now reacting. It's triggering all your junk. You know why Yeshua could act the way he did in the face of all that scourging and everything else? Because he had nothing to trigger. There was nothing there to trigger. Didn't have any flesh to trigger. So there's no reason to respond that way. There's nothing to trigger. You've got a ton. You've got every moment of your life that's been stored. Okay? All right. I was studying, and I do study often, about how our minds work. Okay? And so when we have, I'm looking at the clock, I think I have enough time to tell this. So when we have an experience, a strongly, highly emotional experience, and the more emotion there is to it, and the more often it happens, it embeds in what we call memories, right? It's these neurons that respond in a certain way, and they store these things. Here's the problem, though. The problem is that over time, because we've convinced ourselves of the story of what happened, that studies have shown that at least 50% of it isn't true. You've embellished it, you've altered it, you've changed it in some way. Doesn't mean it wasn't as bad as you remember, but there's at least half the details are no longer correct. So this is why spouses have such hard times when they fight with each other, because they're looking at each other like, that's not what happened. Well, to the other person, in their story, in their head, with all that stuff that triggered and got embedded and everything, that's what they remember. Okay? And to keep that wound open and going, they need to keep finding more fuel to keep them angry at the thing that happened instead of releasing it so it gets embellished and it gets built upon. Now they don't remember what happened the way it happened. I mean, they've done the studies to go and show that you don't you have to understand this now. When you get angry about stuff that happened years ago, you're not remembering it 100% right. You just aren't. Not one of you, both of you. If it happened to two people and you're both remembering it, that's why at least one of you say, that's not what happened. That's not how it happened. No, no, no. And time's out of whack, and the sequence is out of whack, and the memory of what happened, and things that happened differently got now merged in together with this, because this is what's necessary for you to maintain that anger or that hurt or that pain instead of letting it go. Instead of letting it go. Our problem is we're a walking, talking time bombs. Because we never let any, you are like a giant walking minefield. And then you walk and talk to somebody, and eventually, guess what? They're going to step on something and hear a click and go, uh-oh. And that probably is the only thought they get to have before the explosion is in their face. It may not even be uh-oh. It may be like click, boom. There might not even be time for the uh-oh. Okay? But think about it. You are like a walking, living minefield, and it's extending out around you. Whoever walks into your experience where you're aware of them and they're aware of you, whatever that space is, I mean, it could be a number of feet where you can see them or hear them and they do something or say something, but as soon as they come into your sphere of awareness, they can step on a minefield, on a mine in the minefield. They could trigger something. A look, a sound, a word, an action, anything could trigger that minefield. And some of them are cluster bombs. In other words, you got a bunch of things real close together, and once it triggers, it's like boom, 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 and the whole thing starts to explode. Some of them are smaller, sit out by themselves. You trigger it, it's all by itself. Some of them are packed real tight together. One explodes, that whole section just blows up. Does it make any sense? How are you going to love it and your neighbors yourself when you got all of these things making it incredibly difficult? So I'm going to put out there, that's why we need to work on ourselves to be able to do this. Okay? The reason the priest walked by, the Levite walked by, is because they had problems inside. And it wasn't because they were a priest or a Levite. There was just something wrong inside. The Samaritan, by the way, it could have been a whole different story. The priest could have done the things. The Levite could have done it. So a bunch of Samaritans would have looked at, I don't know him, and just walked away. In the story, though, it's trying to make a point. It's the one who had compassion, inside had the ability to love someone that was not necessarily their friend or the person loving them back or whatever, to have love for somebody else. It's got to be a work on the inside. Amen? Amen. Let's pray. Father, we want to come before you, and we know we have so much work to do on the inside. That, Father, we want to come now and ask for you to pour forth in your mercy and in your compassion wisdom and understanding to help us to have the patience to create the space to recognize when we have choice. I should say to recognize that we always have choice. And that, Father, that you would help us to truly understand how to love everyone and not just those loving us. How to deal with those who we perceive as enemies, that we perceive as those that are hating us and cursing and insulting and persecuting. But, Father, to recognize that they're just other human beings in pain. And so, Father, we just want to thank you that you give us the salve that we need for our pain. Through the Ruach, through Yeshua, through you, through your love, through your mercy, through your word that we have, through teachers and instructors, we have the way to deal with our suffering and our pain, to heal it so that we don't have it in the abundance in our hearts spew out on other people. Father, we know this is the weightier stuff. We know this is the more challenging stuff. And so we're going to lean on you for strength, knowing full well that you expect us to do the work and us to do the walk, but we're going to look to you for the strength that we need to do this so that we can be perfect as you are perfect in the heavens, be filled with completeness in all its parts, to be full grown in our maturity as you are. So, Father, we want to come to you now just thanking you, very humbly appreciating your patience with us as we come to you in the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. Amen. Amen.